The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors, not just across town, but across the country? How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Global Reach, the show that helps your business find opportunities, manage risks, and develop strategies for winning in world markets. There's a growing discontent between our institutions and the people that they are supposed to serve. Leaders of our institutions too often seem to be running government, companies, schools, even churches, more for their own benefit than for that of their stakeholders. In consequence, we're losing faith in the institutions we used to take for granted. Nothing can be more illustrative than the scandal of the moment on NSA surveillance. So this week, former White House advisor and internationally renowned economic thought leader Charles Cobb is joining us to talk about the arrogance of institution and address the question, is it time for a new era of accountability? We're going to talk about endemic failures of leadership on the corporate front, the government front, the educational front, etc. It's going to be a very hot show, so stay tuned. Welcome back to Global Reach, Charlie.
Thank you very much, Tay. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Before I give them a bit more of your background, this started out to be a show about global corporate governance. Why have we morphed it into the arrogance of institutions?
That's a good question. Well, you and I had a discussion about some of these issues, and I think we found that we were quickly moving beyond issues of corporate governance, which relate to the relationship between companies and their constituents, their shareholders, to a whole set of issues that relate to other strained relations, if you will, the relationship between universities and students, between churches and the people who attend the churches, between government and the citizens, between the financial services sector and the people who deal with banks. And I look at these array of institutions out there, many of which are held typically by Americans in very high esteem. And my sense is there are a lot of questions being asked about some of the failures of the institutions. It's not just a government issue. It's a private sector issue as well.
And it's not just confined to the United States. We're seeing people questioning institutions in Europe, Turkey, pretty widely. So before we go into the meat of our discussion, let me tell the audience a little bit more about you. And this is Charlie's sixth visit to Global Reach, so some of you have already heard this, but it's really impressive. Charles Cobb is president of the French-American Foundation United States. This is the principal non-governmental organization linking France and the U.S., and it's linking people and companies, and it does a terrific job. And I have to add, it's got the most fascinating events. I had the privilege to attend a few of them, and if you saw my email this week, it tells you how to get on the email list. Anyway, until July 2012, Charles served as president of the Committee for Economic Development, leading nonpartisan business-led research and policy organization that promotes sound macroeconomic policy affecting the U.S. economy. From 1992 to 1997, he served as General Counsel of the United Way of America. And during the George H. Bush administration, he served as Deputy Assistant to the President for Domestic Policy. Between 1983 and 1990, he held positions with the Office of Management and Budget and the U.S. Department of Education. He also authored a book on policymaking in the first Bush White House, numerous law review and op-ed articles, and he also was law clerk to U.S. District Judge Joseph H. Young. So Charles Cobb brings enormous experience and in-depth insight to any discussion, particularly to this one. So when you're talking, Charlie, about the growing disconnect between our institutions and the people we're supposed to serve, what really has given rise to the to your concern?
First of all, I think it's useful to put in perspective why this is happening. And this is actually, I think, it's probably a good thing. At any rate, it's something we can't change. And that is, if you look over the last 20 years, Tay, the growth of technology, the information revolution, has empowered more people with more information faster. And what this means is, it's for the people who run our institutions, it's harder for them to hide the ball. Okay? We're getting, and that's a good thing. So, and that's going to continue whether people like it or not. But what it means is, for example, shareholders get more information about companies faster in this country and around the world. You look at the whole concept of real-time delivery. It wasn't there 20, 25 years ago. And I think that has had a positive impact because it's arming the citizens, constituents, shareholders, et cetera, workers, with information. And when people get information, the good thing is they tend to use it. They tend to ask questions. And so where I think we have problems now, and you alluded to the NSA surveillance issue, where we run into problems is when people try to hide the ball, to duck disclosure, to duck accountability, to duck transparency. And let me add just one other point. It is appropriate at times for institutions, including the government, to maintain privacy. And there are instances, of course, where it is entirely appropriate for the government to dissemble and not to tell the whole truth, and sometimes to mislead. But this is not one of those times, in my view.
So what do you think the government should be doing in terms of data collection? Let's talk first about big data collection by the government. And there have been huge changes since 2001. What should the government be doing? At the moment, they claim, the latest claim is they're creating a mega data library of every phone number that everybody calls. But it looks like they're doing more. They're collecting emails. They have a backdoor into Google, Microsoft, and so many of the others, and have been doing this for years. And that they're monitoring emails. The latest I saw is that have a 51% chance of foreignness. What's your take on the rightness of that?
First of all, I think the government needs to explain what it's doing, why it's doing it, and how it relates to the ultimate end goal, which is the safety and security and the peace of mind of the American public. Let's just take one example, which I saw on the television over the weekend and actually got the quote. It was in yesterday's New York Times, a lead article, NSA disclosures put awkward light on previous denials. That's the headline. And in that article, there's they cite the exchange between Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, and Mr. Clapper, who is the director of national intelligence. And Senator Wyden asks, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans? To which Director Clapper says, no, sir, not wittingly. That is a flat-out lie. If he had said yes, let me explain, or if he had said, I'm sorry, I cannot answer that question in public, you'll have to understand, let's go into a secure setting, I could understand that context. But he flat out lied. And then when a former, I guess once Mr. Clapper got caught in a lie, He said last Sunday on NBC News, he acknowledged that his answer had been problematic, calling it, quote, quote, the least untruthful, close quote, answer he could give. Is that the standard that we want for our officials, to give the least untruthful answer? That is an outrage. That is an outrage. Now, I have yet to understand how, if Clapper had answered the question yes, I do not see how that answer would have disrupted any aspect of what the government is trying to do in terms of collecting the data.
You know, I agree with you. I was looking back at some of the bills and laws that are operating in terms of surveillance, only one of which is really pre-9/11. The first is the FISA Act, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And that says purpose of surveillance is to gather foreign intelligence information, foreign spies, foreign terrorists, foreign threat. Then we have the Protect America Act, which and the Patriot Act, which the NSA is acting under. And you have a completely different standard. And you have this letters of, they call them national security letters, which can be issued by FBI agents without a judge's approval to obtain personal information, phone records, computer records, credit history, and banking history. There have been, I know they said there have been over 3,000 FISA OKs on wiretapping, but there were over 192,000 national security letters issued by the FBI with one terror-related conviction.
Yeah.
And go, really, it's there, but they really haven't told us. And on top of it, it appears that the Senate, the officials, don't actually know what they're operating under. If you look at some of the testimony, they've conflated the Protect America Act, the Patriot Act, and the FISA Act. And I wonder if anybody's actually read the law and read the bills they passed.
Well, you assume that the members of Congress actually read the laws before they vote on them? We know that they don't.
Yeah, I
we know
still
that
remember
they don't.
What...
They hold an interesting little point here, Tay. I wrote on this a couple of years ago. Members of Congress passed a law that would subject CEOs and CFOs to punishment and fines if they sign off on quarterly reports that they haven't read. In other words, CFOs and CEOs now have to affirmatively state that they know what's in their quarterly reports. I'd like to see a situation where members of Congress affirmatively state that they know what they're voting on and they've actually read the law before they cast a vote on it. So it doesn't surprise me that there's this confusion here.
I totally agree with you, Charlie. Look, how many senators actually read the whole report that the Bush administration put out prior to voting to go to war with Iraq?
I have no idea.
Well, I know Hillary Clinton didn't, and I think very, very few of them read beyond the executive summary into the actual report when they were putting American lives at risk. So I think, you know, we are looking at a real one of many failures of governance and failures of responsibility on the part of Congress.
Yeah, this is a very important area, and I would actually call on the president to do something which he from time to time has done and time to time done very well, and that is to give a speech. He has throughout his career, when he was a senator, when he was running for office, he has taken on major issues and laid them out. I'm thinking about the speech he gave on race relations when he was a candidate for president. But the president is a former law professor, a professor of
constitutional law,
which includes the Fourth Amendment. This is a wonderful opportunity for Barack Obama to lay out exactly what the approach is. And you can do that, I am convinced, without sacrificing the integrity or the secrecy of what we're trying to do to protect the country from terrorist acts. But people need to understand the government's rationale, and that way we can test it. Because I also know that many law enforcement and intelligence officials have a tendency to overreact, to overclassify, and we see that all the time. And that's why it is important to hold these individuals and institutions accountable. And if they don't disclose what's going on, particularly to members of Congress, you short-circuit the whole system. And that's where I think Americans are waking up to the fact that we need a massive, massive dose of accountability here. We're not trying to undermine the ability of men and women of good intention to protect us. But we also know that if you sacrifice the principles and the laws, including the Constitution, that have made this country the beacon of freedom that it has been for over 200 years, then we go down the slippery slope of sacrificing our democracy.
Now, on that note, and I agree with you totally, which actually would mean that the terrorists have won, but on that note, we've got to go to break right now. When we get back, we're going to talk more about balancing security with our rights under the Constitution. Don't go away.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone. This is your host, Tay Revez, and I'm here with Charlie Cobb. We are talking about the arrogance of institutions protecting our democracy and the impact on individual citizens as well as on corporations doing business in and with the United States. So when we went to break, we were talking about balancing security with our rights under the Fourth Amendment. And just to remind everyone in the audience who isn't a constitutional scholar or doesn't carry a copy of the Constitution in their pocket, the Fourth Amendment is the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizure shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by an oath or affirmation particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Charlie, why don't you think Americans guard their Fourth Amendment rights as zealously as some of them guard their Second Amendment rights, the right to bear arms?
Fourth Amendment rights are more intangible. until they come into play. Second Amendment is tangible. Everybody thinks about having a firearm, a weapon, a pistol, a gun, something like that. Fourth Amendment is potentially more abstract, again, until you get the knock on the door. But what's happening now is
potentially more vital to the continuance of our democracy.
I'm sorry?
I said, but potentially more fundamental to the maintenance of American democracy.
Yeah, exactly.
But you were saying what's happening now?
Well, the challenge now is, you know, you think of Fourth Amendment law as relating to searches and seizures, but now we've got, with the massive expansion of algorithms throughout our lives, you have ways to conduct searches that are beyond anything that George Orwell could have thought up in his wildest imagination. And I think someday someone's going to write a book about the role of the algorithm in American life. And it touches on everything from what we do as consumers to the issue of surveillance and tracking. And there's a lot more work to be done on this. For example, I resent the fact that companies actually track what you do online and then try to market things. Now, what I would prefer is a system whereby you had to opt in affirmatively to have that happen. Not that the default is the companies can use the information, but you actually have to agree in advance for that type of tracking.
I like that.
Yeah, and you know, I get things all the time on my Kindle or off of Amazon, and I know there's an algorithm out there that looks at the type of books I buy, and it'll make suggestions, that sort of thing. In my view, that's relatively harmless.
Well,
but I'd rather be asked in advance, do you approve of this type of tracking?
And then be required if you opt in to follow the guidelines you've signed up for. Charlie, we've got a caller on hold.
Okay.
Ready for a call-in?
Absolutely.
Hello?
Hi, this is David True. Can you hear me?
Hi, David. Thank you for calling in. David is the founder of NYPAY, New York Area Payments Innovation Organization.
And that was very opportune, the point you were making just now, because one idea I've heard recently is almost... since it is your information, individual's information, coming up on the marketplace, you could monetize it. And if somebody wants to use that information, individuals would get compensated somehow for the use of it. And putting in place is one question, because doing that could be challenging. What do you think of that idea as a way of giving more control over the use of personal information?
I think it's a great idea. I think it's worth exploring, David. I guess you could say, you know, if you don't like the tracking, you know, don't use the Internet, don't buy stuff. In my view, that's not the right approach. But informing consumers, again, this is an issue of the main theme we're talking about here, which is accountability of institutions. So if consumers know what's going on, or if they're being compensated for having their personal information tracked, I'm all in favor of that. It's the big algorithm that's lurking in the background that's doing all sorts of stuff with your information that you don't know about.
Yeah, and I agree very much. And a lot of it comes down to disclosure. In the world I know very well, one of the things that the CARD Act did was put a big box on bank statements that said if you pay off the minimum, it will take you X many years to pay off your revolving balance. That helps because then, as opposed to two pages of terms and conditions that nobody even reads, it makes it very clear what is at stake. And there you have a somewhat functioning market where you can make the decision.
That's an excellent point. Totally agree with you.
So that's personal data. How do you think this combination of data mining, big corporations, and even bigger government is impacting businesses' ability to conduct business, particularly cross-border? The Electronic Frontier Foundation is actually recommending encrypting all international communications traffic and deleting everything. Not at this point, if you can get onto the server and get the information, deleting it on your own computer helps, but how do you think that's going to, particularly if you've also got the United Kingdom, which has access to this whole PRISM data collection ability?
Well, some of this, Tay, may backfire on business. We've just gone through a decade or more in which at least American big business has not enjoyed the most positive of reputations. And I think you're going to have more consumers waking up to the fact that this type of tracking is going on. And once again, it could give business a black eye. And again, business, like government, should be upfront. They should be transparent. They should be clear. They should not be giving answers like Mr. Clapper, whose default is the smallest lie I can possibly get away with, because that's what he said.
Is not an ethical standard for government.
I'm sorry?
I said somehow that is not an ethical standard for government. I agree
with you. Well, it needs to be. It used to be, I think. And it needs to be now, but somehow it can be justified under national security. And there's some people are paid to be paranoid, and that's fine. We need people who are in the security business who are somewhat paranoid. But at the same time, because of that tendency, they need to be held accountable, because if you're paranoid, then everything out there in the world is a threat or a potential threat. And that mindset needs to be reined in, it needs to be tempered, it needs to be filtered, and it needs to be held accountable. It should not be eliminated, by the way. I want to be clear about that. The men, most of the men and women who work to protect us are honorable people. The system, though, is what's failing and needs to be held accountable. When members of Congress state publicly that they don't know what's going on and that they may not be able to receive certain types of information, that's a red light. Something's wrong there.
There's another question. And, David, if you're still on the phone, be curious what you think about it. The U.S. is a transit point for a lot of the world's information, including business information. Do we see them at other countries, and companies based in other countries are going to start trying to do a shunpike to route communications around the U.S.? Is that possible?
I don't know. This is Charlie. David, are you on?
Yeah, I can understand for a minute more. It may be because the concentration of servers, and this is something far beyond what I understand very well, but that the fastest routing point goes through a lot of what's in the U.S., the practicality of governments trying to reroute that is really quite staggering, I think. In some cases, where there's only a few access to the Internet from one country to another, they might be able to do it. But generally, I think that would be very hard to do.
Other countries have communication satellite programs. You could build servers in other countries over time, not instantly.
Certainly you could. I mean, since a lot of this stuff is done privately, it would be an interesting way to incent things, but it's conceivable. If people felt the information was too much subject to being captured by going through servers in the U.S., and with the recent revelations, it will be very interesting to see what the fallout is from that, particularly from the EU, because they're very strict about the privacy much more so.
I'm glad you mentioned it. I was just about to say that. And Charlie, you're president of the French American Foundation. Aren't we in violation of the EU privacy regulations if we are collecting all this data from international persons?
I don't know. I haven't actually looked at the law, so I don't want to hazard an opinion when I haven't actually looked at the law. But I do know that there are people in France, one of the lead ministers in France, Fleur Pellerin, who, by the way, is a young leader of the French-American Foundation. She's been very engaged in some of these issues. She's very thoughtful. She's helping France and others in the EU work through some of these issues. And you know, they have a different set of rules over there. They don't have our First Amendment, but they also seem to be First or Fourth Amendments, but they also seem to be a little more protective of their citizens and how this information is being used.
But they have unitary privacy directives, and this I do know. I used to write about them all the time. And the UK has signed on to the EU's directive and the privacy directive, and I wonder what their use of PRISM means for that. I don't know if we have the answers, but we certainly can raise questions. I'm going to do a last question on FISA, which is, can the FISA court be converted from a rubber stamp organization to a real guardian of our constitutional rights, or is it too late? Do we need something else? We've got 1 minute till break.
It has to. It has to be. It can't. If it's a rubber stamp, it's going to fail. Because again, this is about winning the trust and confidence of the American people. And if it's just a, if it's a rubber stamp, Tay, it's not going to work.
Well, we've got to go to break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about corporate governance, we're going to talk about education, and we're going to talk about a possible new wave of accountability that we all need to get started. So don't go away.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick-and-mortar locations or traditional banker's hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and, of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to the arrogance of institutions. Is it time for a new wave of accountability? Charlie, when we first were talking about this show, we were talking about, as I mentioned earlier, we're talking about corporate governance. And it was, you inspired this with a comment you made about how corporate governance was failing, that companies have been abandoning widely accepted principles of corporate governance. How so?
Well, there's a sense of, I would describe it in some cases, Tay, of just kind of getting away with whatever you can and not really caring about what the customers or the shareholders or the community think. I mean, that's why if you look at the title of this discussion, the word arrogance is important, because arrogance means you don't care. You kind of do what you want. And I think you've seen this in the throughout corporate America, or at least this is a very broad statement, but in companies that don't care about the impact of their behavior, particularly in the run-up to the financial crisis of 2008, all the companies that were making fortunes off of the subprime market, and that ranges from banks to secondary markets to, you know, big financial institutions here in New York City, I mean, many of these people knew it was wrong, but they didn't care, you know, as long as the money was coming in. I mean, these companies that let's take the case of the factory in Bangladesh that collapsed. I mean, these companies knew they were paying substandard wages to these people, and many of the companies knew that they had thousands of people in these factories that were not solid, Or if they didn't know, they looked the other way, or they didn't ask. As long as they were just getting the cheapest hourly rate possible, there's an arrogance there.
And the other part of it, any company that did increase the wages and or put money into plant and safety, which would raise the price, they lost their customers. They lost their, not just U.S., but European clothing customers. I mean, that happened in a plant, actually, I believe it was Cambodia and Thailand, where they were trying to enforce some better worker standards, and that pulled the price up, and firms went to Bangladesh.
Well, part of the problem here is that like other aspects of American life, corporate America has been completely obsessed with short-term profitability and quarterly earnings. And so the drive has been to reduce costs, at, you know, no matter what. And I'm not, you know, I'm a big believer in market capitalism, but market capitalism, because of these excesses, because of some of these failures of governance, market capitalism now finds itself under assault around the world. And that's a problem for those of us who believe in market capitalism. We used to have CEOs who thought in terms of the community, the well-being of their employees, and not just this ridiculous view that everything should be driven by maximizing shareholder value.
And particularly when they own a lot of shares.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, two other things that I thought were particularly egregious. One was these various financial institutions pushing what they knew were bad securities, and I hate to use the word security in this context, on customers, on cities, on individuals. Then you have, post-meltdown, you have the foreclosure fraud, foreclosing on houses where banks didn't have the documentation, robo-signing and swearing to things that they hadn't done, and taking people's homes completely illegally. And although, I mean, there has been a settlement, but almost nobody's been held accountable. Really, why hasn't anyone been held accountable for the global 2008 meltdown? I know there are a couple of states' attorneys general that are trying to do this, but broadly, no one's really been brought to task. A few people have lost jobs, but not many, and they continue to have huge compensation.
Once again, I think this points to the use of the term arrogance. It's what can I get away with, and not be be held accountable. I would urge your listeners to look at a film if they haven't seen Inside Job, which was done by my friend Charles Ferguson, who's actually a young leader of the French American Foundation. But Charles Ferguson is a brilliant man. He's a filmmaker, among other things, and he did this film a couple of years ago called Inside Job, which is really a very clear visual explanation of how we got into the mess in 2008. And the film, it's, don't just take my word for it, it actually won the Academy Award, the Oscar for Best Documentary, 2 years ago. And you look at this film and you come away asking exactly the same question, Tay. I'm a lawyer, from a legal perspective, did some of these activities rise to the level of fraud? Well, I think we should have prosecutors taking a look at this and actually trying to look at the behavior and square it, if possible, with the criminal laws of the country. Because clearly, the whole, at least the subprime bubble that led to the meltdown, I'm convinced it was fraudulent behavior.
I think, you know, my perspective, I think you're right, and I think what we've seen with the foreclosure fraud, and the only two people who seem to be going after them are the two states' attorneys general, Biden and Eric Schneiderman.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Nothing on the federal level. And now we're seeing some what appear to be successful attempts to thwart even the fairly weak provisions of the Dodd-Frank bill.
Part of the answer to this, you raised the Dodd-Frank bill. Well, that gets us right into the issue of lobbyists and the role of money in decision making. And I suspect that there may be part of the answer to your question may have to do with some heavy lobbying in Washington.
I can think of one example that's been in the news recently, which is the bill that Obama fairly recently signed on genetically modified organisms, which basically exempts them from any kind of governance. And it was reportedly written by Monsanto, which is the biggest producer, biggest creator of genetically modified organisms. Just one example. And I am sure there's a lot of money. You probably can think of some others. I'll give you one other. We have chemical companies who are engaged in fracking, injecting all kinds of chemical cocktails into water, but they are exempt from the provisions and protections of the Clean Water Bill.
I'm sure that wasn't accidental.
No. I would say that that can be tracked right back to campaign contributions.
Well, it's
and
interesting. You raised some examples there, and yet when 90% of the American public indicates through polls that they favor expanded background checks on gun purchases, somehow that view of 90% of the American public isn't translated into meaningful action by the Congress. And yet a narrow interest, a narrow provision affecting a regulatory activity, somehow that gets through. Don't you think more Americans are getting increasingly skeptical about how our system is working, both Republicans and Democrats?
I think a lot are. The question is, what do we do about it?
I think one answer to that is we need more citizens engaged. I spent 6 years on the board of a great organization called called Common Cause. All my Republican friends used to give me grief about that until I reminded them that, that Common Cause was actually founded by a Republican, the late John Gardner, moderate centrist Republican. And the purpose of Common Cause is to hold power accountable. And that is a theme that goes right back to the origins of the United States. And whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent, holding power accountable is vital to the smooth functioning of our democracy. It's also vital for other institutions. It's important to do that when you talk about holding corporations accountable, whether you're a shareholder or an employee or a member of the community where that company operates. So I'd like to see greater emphasis, and it'll happen. We've gone through waves of accountability in this country before. We did it after Vietnam. The business community has gone through downsizing, right-sizing. Government briefly under Al Gore when he was vice president made some efforts at reinventing. But I think we're overdue for one of these. And you look at these failed institutions. Take post-secondary education. Why is it that so many of our young people are now saddled with debt that they had to incur to get a college education, over $1 trillion in student loan debt? The men and women who ran our institutions for the last 20 years need to be held accountable. How did that happen? How did the rate of spending increases in post-secondary education go up four times the consumer price index, twice the rate of healthcare? How did that happen?
Which is huge.
Yeah, that's an example of an institution that has failed its customers and needs to be held accountable.
And student loans are not, you can't wipe them out with bankruptcy. I mean,
that's correct.
I remember I graduated with a fairly hefty student loan burden back when I did, and I look at it now. When we're looking at how this is going to affect their ability to get jobs, their job mobility, their ability to do big purchases, ability to get married. I mean, it's huge. It's across the board. It is going to change this generation. Are they going to actually be able to afford health care? Are they going to be able to afford to buy cars?
Well, we know it's having a drag on the economy right now. I mean, more young people are living at home with their parents. They're not buying cars. They're not renting apartments. They're not buying furniture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there is a trickle effect here, if you will. But the problem is we're saying to our young people, you need more post-secondary education than ever before, and yet we're not investing in them. We're telling them, go out and take out the equivalent of a mortgage. We didn't do that. If you look at the GI Bill after World War II, it was a public investment in the future human capital of those soldiers coming back from World War II. One of the greatest investments the government ever made. So again, just to make the point, this is not an anti-government message. Government has an important role to play, and in my view, should be making more investments in the future of our young people.
If we want a productive, competitive workforce.
Yeah, exactly. But we've had a systemic failure here. I mean, you can look at the system for 20 years after the GI Bill, you know, from 1946 into the 70s and 80s, and look at it now. The model, the business model, is totally different. And it's a failed business model, in my view. You can't continue to have price increases in post-secondary education that are going up twice as fast as healthcare and four times the rate of growth in the consumer price index. It's not a sustainable proposition.
At the same time, you don't fund pre-kindergarten and are kicking hundreds of thousands of poor kids out of Head Start.
Yeah.
We've got to go to break now. When we get back, you wrote a paper in 1995 on the accountability in post-secondary education. You also wrote about waves of accountability, and I want to talk about your three waves of accountability and how we get into a fourth wave. Don't go away. There's more to come.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Need to hold focus groups in seven countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait. They just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynard. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone, to our last segment. We've been having a really hot discussion on loss of accountability and the arrogance of institutions. In this segment, I really want to turn to how we can start a new era of accountability, or to go with one of Charlie's works, a fourth wave of accountability. Now, in 1995, you wrote about three waves of accountability. What were they?
Well, the three were the military after Vietnam, the business community that was beginning to face, competition from around the world, and they had to think about downsizing, right-sizing. And then the third wave briefly touched government during the Clinton-Gore administration, when Vice President Gore was in charge of an effort to try and reinvent governments. So, and those three waves, I think, were good. They didn't fix everything, but we're long overdue for a fourth wave, in my view.
So we've been talking about through this whole show is really this broad failure of accountability by extremely arrogant institutions, arrogant leadership across the board, government, business, education, religion. These are all institutions that in which we've traditionally reposed a degree of trust, varying degrees, but certainly some. And because of that, we accepted their authority, at least in some degree. Now the ecosystem's failing. How do we restore the ecosystem of institutions? What would be the fourth wave?
We need empowered citizens who are informed, energized, and feel that they are encouraged by their fellow citizens to ask the tough questions. It's a question of the Supreme Court Justice, I think it was Brandeis, who said that the sunlight is the best disinfectant. We need more sunlight. We need more people asking questions. I mentioned Common Cause before, but I'd like to see at least a phase of this accountability movement really start with our young people who are coming through our post-secondary institutions now, who are graduating from our high schools and going into post-secondary institutions. In many instances, some of the people coming out of our K-12 system don't have the skill set. Why is that the case? Why do we give high school diplomas to people who can't do third grade math? Okay, that can be fixed. Parents can demand answers to that question. Why is it that college tuitions are rising four times the rate of the consumer price index? I would suggest, for example, on that question, I'd like to see the Congress ask more questions and hold hearings about a cost escalation in post-secondary education. But I'm convinced if we got our young people more energized to join groups like Common Cause, to raise these questions as they're continuing with their education, we will begin to create a pipeline of citizens who believe in accountability. And this, by the way, is not a threat to our democracy. It is the heart and soul of our democracy.
I couldn't agree with you more. As we've talked about, I'm working with one advocacy organization, which is a strong ally of Common Cause in New York State, which is Citizen Action. And we're grassroots all over the state. And in fact, it was one of the reasons I joined it, was because instead of pitting upstate New York against downstate New York, we work together in the state legislature, and we're working with Common Cause right now on a fair election bill to bring public financing of campaigns to New York State and try and ameliorate one of the most corrupt state governments in the country. The other organization, and we are really trying very hard to bring young people in. We've got actually a conference coming up at the end of the month called Justice Works, where we're trying to recruit as many young people as we can. And there are some other groups. The Occupy Wall Street was an attempt to bring in young people, and there are some spinoffs of that. And the other side is on the corporate democracy side. What do you think of this effort to bring corporate accountability, transparency through shareholder resolutions?
Well, personally, I think it's a good idea. If you have a model that is based on shareholder democracy and maximizing shareholder value, which, by the way, the latter I don't subscribe to as a major rationale. But if you're going to justify everything in terms of the shareholders, then you can't have it both ways. So when the shareholders kind of rise up and say, hey, wait a minute, we don't like some of the things we've seen, or we want to change the board makeup or have our own resolutions, I think that's a healthy thing. I think it's a healthy thing. So the you can't have it both ways, though.
We had John Coffey of Harvard on the show about a year and a half ago, and he's done a study where they really show that long-term profitability, the companies with better governance, and the companies that are dealing with long-term profit rather than short-term, they do better, and they do better for their stakeholders. So maybe what we're also saying is you've got to be a long-term shareholder, not a trader. And we go back to big data and the algorithms of people who hold shares for a minute or less.
Yeah, I've read John Coffey's work since I was in law school. He's got a really fine mind. So I pay attention to what he has to say.
So again, going back to some of the state efforts and really some of the efforts of the institutional shareholders, they seem to be the ones pressing shareholder resolutions, at least on the campaign spending front. We've seen it out of CalPERS. We've seen it in New York State coming from our state controller and coming from the New York City public advocate, who has introduced and supported resolutions for accountability and prosperity. Now, the individual person or the business who's a shareholder really could go look, actually read their corporate resolutions and actually vote their shares or vote their proxies for some of these resolutions.
No, I think that's a good thing. That's a good thing. When people try to hide the ball or tell you you don't need to know something or obscure it, that's a red flag. I mean, if you just take another example, the way that the Catholic Church handled over the last decade the issues, not only in this country but around the world with regard to allegations of pedophilia, they made a huge mistake. They needed to get out in front of this issue, which they didn't do, and they got locked into denial and protection of some of these people who were guilty, and they're paying a price for it now. So my motto is, wherever possible, you err on the side of transparency. As I said at the outset, Tay, there's some instances where government, to do its job, has to dissemble, but what we're going through right now, in my view, is not that example, not that case, but it will be helpful to have the president and other leaders lead and explain what's going on.
So we've got about a minute and a half to close. If I were going to ask you, what are the main action takeaways that our audience should get from this show? The first one would be lobby Obama to make a speech.
The first is to get involved, to get informed, and if you feel deeply about it, get outraged and do something about it. And that can mean, I mean, members of Congress will respond if they hear from people. It's the don't be shy message, and look for organizations that support the perspectives that you share. You and I mentioned Common Cause. There are others, but democracy is effective when citizens are engaged, and that's what we need. Don't tolerate the lies.
I agree with you thoroughly. I thought engagement is an obligation as much as voting is an obligation of democracy. Any last word?
It's how we hold people accountable in between elections.
You know, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much. How can people find the French American Foundation?
On the web, Google plug-in FrenchAmericanFoundation.org or write to me directly, ckolb@FrenchAmerican.org. And I'd love to hear from your listeners.
And really look for their events, because they're doing a lot of really interesting speakers on topics like this. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank Charlie for coming on the show.
Thanks, Tay. You're welcome.
And on behalf of Charlie and myself, we wish you great success in extending your global reach, and I'll add this week, and in protecting American democracy. Thanks all.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.